Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Roger, we got a roll.
Tower clear.
Roger.
Yes, my dear friends all over the world, this planetary system, the galaxy, this universe and beyond. I'm speaking here on ET First Contact Radio and my name is Martin Horst. I give you 3 times a week the latest galactic news and I have a very interesting gentleman next to me from Scotland. His name is George Smith and George is an amazing, really an amazing person. I met him yesterday at the Barge Inn in Wiltshire, UK, where the crop circles appear. So without further ado, George, I want to welcome you to my show, ET First Contact Radio.
Thank you very much.
It's an honor to have you on the show. And why don't we start to talk about the early years, your childhood, and what happened there?
Okay. I don't speak about anything before the age of 12 years old. The experiences I've been having have continued more or less all through my life. Mainly the experiences were always up in Aberdeenshire because that was where I was brought up. We have a farm up there, or we had a farm. My father and mother passed away, and I inherited one of the farms. But when doing the farming, that takes you into a learning process of economics worldwide and working with machinery. Mm-hmm. So this is where our basics is going to be going, into machinery and the workshed or the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get back to my early years. When I was 12 years old, approximately, in November, I was born first in 1958, June of 1958. And at 12 years old in November, I came in from the cattle court, been out to put some hay in front of the cattle before we went in to settle down for the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this bright light cross the sky. Went down behind a hill.
Mm-hmm.
So I came in, I told my mother what I had seen. But then on the 9 o'clock news that night, my mother says, "Oh," she says, "that's what you told me you've seen. You saw earlier tonight. Other people have also seen this light that you saw." So that was confirmation that what I had seen was also seen by other people. So life was reasonably okay through to about, I was 20, approximately 20 years old, and I was coming home one night from a Saturday night out. I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I don't do drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm driving home, and I was at the sort of 4 miles from where we live.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this bright light in the sky. It looked to be less than half a mile from where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember slowing down and focusing on the light. And I'm thinking, what on earth is that? It's not a helicopter, because it is moving from the west to the east, but going very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
I am heading from the south to the north. And I'm focusing on the light, thinking, what is it? The light is approximately half the size of the moon. And
whoa.
It's a white, white light.
Very large.
Very, pretty large, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm focusing on it, it continued to move slowly across the sky. Then I continued with my travels. Got home, and a few weeks later, I began to recall what happened that night, or a little bit about that night. And what I could remember was, I was getting in over the car, but I do not remember getting out of the vehicle, stopping the vehicle and putting it out of gear. So this tended to be part of the scenario where I was recalling pieces of information.
Mm-hmm.
But it leaves you very confused, because you cannot put the parts yet, because there's no drawing board with this information on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd know when I could ask for information, so I just had to continue with my work and put it down as something strange that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the farm, I tended to try to do everything to the best of my ability. And one of the things I was interested in was ploughing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was tipped to be the Scottish champion ploughman.
Wow.
Now, it doesn't interest me to be the best. It's not a challenge. It's something I don't really go to try and do.
Mm-hmm.
But it was natural.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did like was, I liked to work in the workshop and do little bits and pieces and do welding and grinding and working with metal or working with wood.
Mm-hmm.
So later on, that was 20, I was about 20. Things were quiet through until approximately 1991. It really kicked off. There was a period of time in the 1980s. There were different things happened. I was down south in Kent. There was one or two things happened. I was losing quite a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
My watch would be an hour missing from it. I couldn't understand where this hour had gone. But people that's involved with this same subject that have also had missing time will know that it wasn't quite a full hour that was missing. So they'll understand what I'm saying here. So I had a lot of this happen. But in the 1991 approximately, things really started to heat up. And this is when I was seeing these UFOs at night.
Wow.
My brother-in-law would come round past to see me 6 o'clock at night. And he'd say, anything in the sky tonight? I'd say, oh, I don't know. Let's go out and have a look.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go outside, look up in the sky, wait for a while, 4 or 5 minutes, and then a light would appear. And this light would bounce around in the sky for a while, and then brother-in-law would say, thank you very much. I'll go away home now. And he would come back and forth to me every night, and we would do this every night. And this was in the early 1990s. But I was also having some problems with the police. So I had to leave home for a while. So I went to this friend of mine. So I stayed with him for a while. And when I was at his house, for 6 weeks, for 5 nights, for over 6 week period, I was seeing UFOs in the sky. And on some of the occasions, one day I was out watching them, and they would appear as they usually did, and I'd ask them to move around in the sky for me through using telepathy. And on this occasion, the UFO would fade away into just looking like a star. And I'd keep asking, can you move? Can you swing like a pendulum? And it wouldn't move. And I'm thinking, why are you not moving? Why are you not? What's going on here? Then it would start moving for me. What I then realized was, across the field, once the UFO had started to move over a period of 4 or 5 nights, I realized a car always drove along this road. So I then began to realize that when the UFO faded to look like a star in the sky,
mm-hmm.
what I knew was going to happen was a car would then come along the road later. Because the point in the sky where the UFO was, they knew that the driver of the car would see them.
Uh-huh.
So they then dimmed down so that the driver in the car would not see the UFO until after it had passed that area. So with this, it brings you into a lot of learning where about these UFOs appear. And what we did find out was, what I did learn was, they always appeared in the same places in the sky. They would cross the sky and they would disappear at the same areas. And later on, I began to realize there was a stone circle in the area they would appear and a stone circle in the area they disappeared.
Interesting.
So later in my life, I then had to go and visit all the stone circles in the Aberdeenshire area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the stone circles are all connected with ley lines. But the stone circles connect right back to the pyramids.
Indeed, yes.
And the learning, where I thought I started out just to be a farmer, my learning took me into learning about stone circles, ley lines, energy, people, places. This year, I just came back from Poland. I was out in Poland for 12 weeks. And I went out to the stone circles in the north of Poland.
Interesting.
And they are amazing. Absolutely amazing. When I was there on one night, I looked up in the sky and there was a UFO, a couple of UFOs moving around. So let's get back to the 1990s. Mm-hmm. That is an exciting period of time. In the late, in the 1980s, I'd started to work trying to get an engine to run using water as a fuel. But in the 1990s, I had stopped for a while. But our star brothers and sisters wanted me to get going and continue with that work. So I went back to my shed and I'm continuing with the work. But at that time, I didn't have internet connection. I wasn't connected to the internet. So I had to just practice and trial and error. I tried some crazy stuff in my shed, as you do. So eventually, I got the engine to run.
Wow.
But it took me over 10 years. And I thought, once I get the engine to run, I'm going to be the happiest guy in the world. Well, when I got it to run, I probably was the saddest person in the world for taking so long to do something so simple. Now, the way I did was using electroanalysis, a 12-volt battery connected to a pipe and a rod down the middle of it. I then found out over that year there was seven other ways to break water down and produce, extract hydrogen and oxygen from water. And the one that excited me the most was using a vibrational frequency. And Stephen Myers, he also had a beach buggy running using that similar technology. So now you understand I'm involved with technology, but that is basic technology. Where do we go from there? Do we continue with the technology, or where do you want to go from here?
Well, how did the technology come to you? Was it the Star Brothers and Sisters that gave it to you?
No, it was not. But they kept encouraging me to work on it. But yes, I would say they did help with putting little pieces of information towards me, like handing them on a plate.
Yes.
Now, in the shed, when I would be working, if I was going on to some major project like that, I'd have the shed immaculately clean and everything all done and dusted. And on this particular night, I had been working in my car, and my 13-millimeter spanner that I'd been using quite often that evening kept disappearing, always ending up back onto the bench or somewhere else in the shed. And I knew that our star brothers and sisters were moving this 13-millimeter spanner. So this was just a little bit of a little wee poke saying, waking up, pay attention. There's more to what's going on here than meets the eye. So when I'm working with the hydrogen, I bought a gas regulator. And what I did was I stripped down the gas regulator so I understood how it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And when you strip something down, what you do is you put everything down in the order you take it off. Mm-hmm. So when you then put it back together, you have just to work along the line.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it very simple. So on this occasion, there were three bolts on the top of the gas regulator. The first ones I took off, put them onto a lid, a box lid, shoe box lid. Sorry, six bolts there was. So I'd stripped down the gas regulator, saw how it worked, put it back together again. But I only had five bolts at the end. One bolt was missing. So I took the shoebox lid and I moved it from where it was in my shed and put it underneath a shelf.
Yes.
Knowing what they were playing at.
Yes.
So I left my shed, locked the shed door, went to bed. Came back out to the shed the following day, unlocked it, went to the shoebox lid and had a look. The shoebox lid is empty. I did different things, left the shed at night, checked the shoebox lid, everything's empty. The following day, came back out, unlocked the shed door, went to the shoebox lid, and here is the bolt where I had set it down on the shoebox lid. Now, what this is telling me is, at the time I didn't understand it. Well, what it is, it's about vibrational frequency. And they can vibrate at a higher level to us.
Yes, they do.
And this is a reason they can move something and have it appear later, because they have moved that item and raised it to a higher vibrational level. So we do not see it. But then when they lower it to a vibrational level, we then see it again.
I understand. Yes, yes.
So
with the high vibration, it's invisible.
It is invisible from our spectrum that we are vibrating at in the meantime.
Yes, but maybe in the meantime, they were also heightening your frequency so that you would be able to see it later, at the later stage.
That is correct. And what they were doing, they were educating me.
Mm-hmm.
And I class myself as very fortunate to have the best teachers and doctors in the universe. Because these teachers teach at a level that our educational system cannot match.
No.
Now, back in the 1990s, 95 thereabout, I drew a mural on the petrol tank of my motorbike,
mm-hmm.
of two little ETs that I saw at the bottom of my bed one night.
Right.
But I altered one part of it, or one part of the mural.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm driving around the countryside with my motorbike, and No one's saying a word, no one's saying anything. I think someone must say something, someone must have seen these people. So eventually, time passed, I removed the mural, put on some other murals. I was also having motorbike rallies on my farm.
Mm-hmm.
And it was said, 1997, I think, May 1997. I'm in our local pub. The dance is going to be going on Saturday night. And this guy's, so I'm walking around the hall, put out their arm and says, "Hey, George, what's happened to your motorbike?" I says, "Oh, it's away getting a mural put on." "Oh, what's the mural that you're putting on, as in the picture that you're getting drawn on the petrol tank?" I says, "Oh, it's a picture of Jesus feeding the 5,000. the people, there were three men sitting at the table, and they all looked at one another. They then looked back at me and they said, the same theme. So they all looked at one another again. One of them says, take him outside. So one of them says, both of us? No, just you. So I'm taken outside, or asked to come outside with him. So we went out into the car park away to the far end. This guy says, you know, you caused us a lot of trouble with that mural you had on your motorbike. And I'm looking at the guy thinking, what? Oh, I don't understand. He says, oh, he says, we're from the Air Force at Lossiemouth. Lossiemouth is approximately 45 miles from where I am in Aberdeenshire. Lossiemouth is the main Air Force base in the north of Scotland.
Yes.
So these three guys are from the Air Force base. So the trouble that I had caused was, he says, we, the people at RAF Lossiemouth, were all questioned. Who revealed that information about the ETs to George? Which of you guys at the Air Force base revealed this information to George? And the guy's saying, we're all saying, it wasn't me, it wasn't me, it wasn't me. And they're all saying, none of them revealed any information. The guy from the Air Force base said, anyone with any connection to my area was questioned. And he said, we were really questioned. So he says, it was accepted that we had not said a word. We had not told anyone. We hadn't said anything. So he says, the guy starts shaking now. He says, the decision was taken, was made, that you had to be taken out. And I'm looking up at this guy. I'm not very tall. I'm a little guy. And I'm looking up at this guy thinking, oh, you're a bunch of hardy guys. Wow, this is going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So the Air Force guy says, we knew where it was going to be done, how it was going to be done, and who was going to do it. And I'm standing there sort of looking at the guy thinking, wow, interesting. So then he says to me, the Air Force guy says, before we went to do it, as in take me out, have me murdered, we were approached by your friends, your brothers and sisters.
From the stars.
The star brothers and sisters. We're approached by your friends and told, back off, do not touch. Now we want you to go and speak to George and give him this information. So here is the information that was shared with me.
This will be exciting, my friends.
So what the guy from the Air Force said was, imagine you come downstairs in the morning and you go to your fish tank. And I'm standing there nodding, thinking, yeah, I understand. Totally understand. You look and see that all the fish are okay. And you look for your favorite fish and see it is okay. And I stood there nodding, thinking, yeah, I understand this. Yeah, fully understand. He says, you go, you have your breakfast. You get in over your car, you drive to Aberdeen, you make a phone call to America, you get in over an aeroplane, you fly to London. You come back home at night, and you go to the fish tank, and you look and see the fish. And you look to see your favorite one is okay. And I'm standing there nodding, thinking, yeah, I understand this. Understand exactly. The Air Force guy said to me, well, we are the fish in the fish tank, and your friends are us going to Aberdeen, phoning America, and flying to London. Mm-hmm. How do you tell the fish in the fish tank what you did all day? Because their world is in the fish tank. They do not understand distance. They do not understand cars. They do not understand telephones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you see it like that, it makes a lot of sense for some people. But I already knew this information. What actually happened was, I was then told that let me know that our star brothers and sisters were visiting RAF Lossiemouth. So what the guy then told me was, or first he asked me a few questions. He says, how many different types do you meet? So I'm standing counting with my fingers, on 1, 2, 3, 4. I'd got to 4. And he then said, where do you meet them? But I had not answered how many different types I meet.
Mm-hmm.
I did not answer where I meet them.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, what technology have they given you to work on in your shed? And my mouth dropped. I was shocked that they knew this information.
Yes.
That they knew that I had been given. I did not answer that question. Now, here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay, go on.
This guy told me that he drove the bus for the RAF Lossiemouth base. And on one occasion, they had taken out of the sky and downed a UFO right next to where I was living. And they came and picked it up and took it back to RAF Lossiemouth. And I immediately thought, I know which night that was. I remember that night. I remember the military vehicles. And I thought, you sick and sick. That was for me to go and back engineer. So this UFO is sitting at RAF Lossiemouth. But the guy also told me that they had picked up quite a few craft in the northeast of Scotland, and they had them at RAF Lossiemouth. And what he told me was, says, we don't have an effing clue how this stuff works. But he pointed to me and said, you do. So that then brings us into a huge amount of knowledge of what's going on within the military base at RAF Lossiemouth. So thank you for that.
Yes. Well, George, if I may go on to the next question. Do you want to start with the 6 weeks period of intense contact, or do we go to the jet fighters?
Yes, let's go. Very shortly, very, very quickly, I was an intense period of 6 weeks where they were coming to me 5 nights a week. What was actually happening was I was getting operations done. They were checking out my body, checking that everything was okay, and just seeing it generally if I was in good health. I don't go to the doctor. I didn't go for my 50th checkup with the doctors, and I don't bother with doctors. I keep well clear of them. Don't need to when you have got an operating table on a UFO that comes and pays you a visit every now and again.
And gives you healing and improvements.
And gives healing and improving. Yeah, that's right. So we'll come to this shortly before the end of the program here.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to speak about the power of the mind and how you can create the weather that you have around you. And you can make the weather that you have around you better, a lot better. You can create nice sunny days, warm days, and get rid of the negativity. So, yeah, we'll come to a part of the Air Force. What happened was the system was desperate to get me to work with them, but I won't work with them. And in 2001, approximately, a mentor for Aberdeen University was coming back and forth to my farm. Because by this time, everyone knew that I'd had an engine running and using water as a fuel. So it brought my name into the attention of people in power, which I did not know. I didn't understand the system at that time, not fully. But I'll tell you, you learn very quickly. So I'm being paid a visit by this guy who's a mentor at Aberdeen University. He is also the head Freemason for the northeast of Scotland at that time. So he's trying me to share my information with them and not speak to anyone locally. And I'm sort of wanting to know, why am I not supposed to speak to local people? And he says, because they are all idiots. And that annoyed me. Why should I go and share the information with them, but not with these people who I grew up with that he calls idiots? I believe people should be shared the truth and help to educate them.
Of course.
And it should be free. But they wanted this information to go to them and to the university so that they could then select which parts would be shared with people.
Mm-hmm. And so, benefit from it.
And they would want to benefit from it. So, remembering that they have these UFOs up at RAF Lossiemouth, what then happened was, in this process of this guy, we'll call him the Freemason, coming back and forth, he said to me one day, we want you to patent your hydrogen unit. And I said, oh, no, I'm not patenting it. Yes, you need to. I said, no, I'm not. He says, what happens if someone steals it? I said, they're welcome to it. And he was shocked at that response. I says, they need to understand how it works. And the expression on his face was sheer horror. Realizing there was no point in them stealing something if they don't know how it works.
Brilliant.
So, in 2001, I am paid a visit by a local Freemason and asked how much money I need to continue with my work. And I said, I don't know, maybe £100,000. But that was not £100,000 today or on that day. That was £100,000 over maybe 20 years. So whenever I had surplus money, I would spend it in my shed. So the man, he replies, no, we will not give you £100,000, but we have a laboratory at Aberdeen University, and you will work there. We will give you all tools, all materials you need. Anything that cannot be made, cannot be purchased, will be made to your specification. We will also give you any professor, any scientist from anywhere in the world to help you with your work. And we will put £10,000 cash into a safe deposit box every month. Now, at that time, I was pretty hard up. I struggled to put milk on my table at that time. And I said, no. The guy said to me, you will never be allowed to build anything ever again. And I moved my head to a side as if to say, why? And he says, because we won't let you. Now, this was a local Freemason. So now you begin to get the picture. But at that time, I didn't fully understand, because this is part of the learning in this process.
Indeed.
So it wasn't long after that, our local pub, the people in the pub were squeezed out of the pub, and it was taken over by a brother and a sister. And the brother was married to a girl who sat in the office with the chief of police in Aberdeen. And the sister was married to a guy who worked at RAF Lossiemouth.
Interesting.
But they were very, very nice to me when I went into the pub. Really nice. And they tried to be friends with me.
Mm-hmm.
And because of different things that go on, you tend to begin to be wary of people, and especially when they're being very friendly.
Of course.
So on this occasion, I kept my distance. But they revealed quite a lot of information. There was a girl there. They wanted to get involved with me. And I wouldn't get involved with her. So they wanted to know. They just want to know information. That's just all they're wanting to do. They want to find out information.
Of course.
But I stopped going to the pub. And what then happened was the police started harassing me. So if I went out onto the road, the police, they would harass me. I'd be stopped by the police, or just continuous, on and on. So I would speak to my star brothers and sisters and put in a complaint. So they would go to RAF Lossiemouth, tell them, leave George alone. So eventually, they would use a different system. So the police, they would then start that, they would stop me and breathalyze me. And I'd sometimes be stopped by the same police and breathalyzed by the same police. And they know that I don't touch alcohol. And on one occasion, well, the first time it happened on three different occasions. But on this first occasion, one of the policemen went to the car to report that they'd stopped me, whatever. And the one that's left with me said, what is going on? Why have we to harass you? And I said to the policeman, oh, come on, you know why you have to harass me. But I knew he didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, what? Why? No, he says, I don't know. I says, you're sitting with technology not of this earth at RAF Lossiemouth, and they want me to help back engineer it. And the policeman would say, no, never. And with that, the other policeman would come back. And on three occasions, this has happened. So I now know that I have not only been being harassed, but there is a determined effort to harass me. So I'm on board the craft one night in December, and they showed me some technology taken into the science room, and I'm showing some technology. And what... It was pretty amazing technology, not something we have here on planet Earth, or not that I had seen. So I'm then taken back onto the craft in the January, the following January, about 6 weeks later, at the end of January. And I'm showing this technology again. But this time, They said, we want you to build this technology. We want you to build this device, is what they said. They gave me some pieces of information, and that was me put on my way. So 6 months later, I still had not started to build it. But I'd gone through it in my head over and over and over. So they came back to me and they gave me into trouble for not getting on and building the device. They said, now get on and build it. So I went to France, spoke to him, said, where do I start? He told me, draw it down on a piece of paper. Then make it out of paper mache or wood or something. So that is what I did. So I spent quite a lot of time doing this. I think in total about 4 years I spent on this part of technology. And on one occasion, a man walks into my shed. And I'll make this very, very quick because we're running out of time here. Mm-hmm. So this guy walked into my shed. I shouted, get out. And he stopped, looked at me, and then continued to walk towards my lathe. And I'm given information from our star brothers and sisters about who this guy is. I shouted, get out, etc., you thief, and such and such.
Freemason.
He was a Freemason. I was told by my star brothers and sisters, he's a Freemason. And I shouted, get out of here, you thieving, such and such.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm running at him, pushing him out of the shed. I got him out of the shed. As I'm pushing, he says, you must have technology in here you don't want people to see. I says, I've told you 3 times already, get out, now get out. So I got him out of the shed. He says, you should not be allowed to have a shed. So he says, I only came to tell you we're putting a drain through your field to take surface water from the main road to the ditch, which had all been arranged long time beforehand. So he's away. This is the beginning of the last week in January 2011.
Mm-hmm.
On the following Tuesday, I think it was, I am spoken to by our star brothers and sisters, and this is a sentence that they said. It says, We have been to RAF Lossiemouth, and this is what we told them. So here is a sentence. We've told you to leave George alone. Now leave him alone. And for the privilege of us coming here to tell you this, we're going to crash 2 of your jet fighters. Now, I don't bother with a television or a paper. So I'm going on working in my shed and doing my own thing. And in February, late February, a neighboring farmer came in past to see me. And he says, I know you don't bother with a TV or a paper. He said, but when strange things happen, he says, by coming to you, you seem to know what's going on. I nodded. He says, well, do you know? No, he says, you don't know. He says, but the RAF are taking a jet fighter out of the sea at near RAF, near Lossiemouth today. I says, I says, that's one of the 2 jet fighters that are going to be crashed. My local farmer friend, his mouth dropped, and he says, that is the second one that has crashed. I said, when did the first one crash? Oh, he says, it's a while ago now. So it turns out the first one crashed on the 29th of January, 2011, and the second one was crashed on the 15th of January 2011, 15th of February 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So later on, about a few weeks later, 4 or 5 weeks later, there's a major meeting from the Star Brothers and Sisters. And Star Brothers says, it is getting very dangerous for you here on planet Earth. We are looking to take you off. They were going to have a major meeting. So I got the results of the meeting, and it was that I still had to stay here for a while yet. But within the time of the meeting happening and the end result, I was asked, how much money do I want for all the trouble the system has given me?
Mm-hmm.
For putting me on the hit list to have me killed, for stealing my Jeep, for trying to bankrupt me, for tapping my phones at the highest level, for the harassment from the police and all the other stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, this is a major change on their part. And the person at the other end of the phone says, would you accept, and here's a figure, £10 million. But remember, it was, would you accept? Now that means it's open-ended. But when I told my close friends, they all said, and you said no, didn't you? And I said, yeah, that is correct. I said no. What the answer I gave was, I would have to think about it. And my friends, they laughed and said, what a beautiful answer.
It is.
When I tell people that do not understand me and what's going on, they say, and you took the money, didn't you? So I see differences with different people. Some think it's all about money. But let me tell you, it's not about the money.
No.
They can give me all the money in the world, and I still would say no. It is about the contact we have. So thank you very much.
Yes, and I want to clarify to the listeners that I had an urge on Monday to come to Wiltshire and be here a couple of days because I'm leaving tomorrow back to Holland. And you just said before you spoke about the money that it was getting unsafe in Scotland for you. So you came down south, the south of England.
That is correct, yes.
And the reason for this is that we met.
That is correct.
And the reason for this is also that we are doing this radio show.
That is correct. Now, since I have had to leave, there was another incident in 2012. The police were going to ram my car. And I'm on the phone to RAF Lossiemouth, shouting down the phone to them that they didn't sort out the police. Our time is running out here.
Let's do another show on Sunday.
Okay, okay.
And we will keep the story for the listeners for Sunday at 10 a.m. Pacific time, which will be 1 p.m. Eastern time, 6 p.m. GMT for England, and 1900 hours Central European time. So this was George Smith from Scotland on the show on BBS Radio. My program is ET for Contact Radio. I love you all, and I send you love and light. And George, thank you.
Thank you very much. And there's a lot of positivity here. Focus on good weather and focus on good things because the power of the mind is absolutely amazing.
Yes, and we can talk about this on Sunday.
We will speak about how you can change the weather to be in good and make trees have their leaves on right up to Christmas time here in the Northern Hemisphere in Britain and in Scotland.
Wonderful. Well, George, thank you. And thank you for listening, my friends. And thank you, Douglas, for engineering the show. Namaste.